fields of bodies burning as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Hi, this is Bob Petrakis bringing you the other side of the news.
And I'm Dan Dugan, the other guy on the other side. WGRN, the Green Renaissance.
This is Bob Petrakis bringing you the other side of the news. My guest today, an independent candidate for the Columbus City Council, Scott Singerat-Sumboon. Scott, welcome to the other side of the news.
Thanks for having me here today.
And hopefully you'll be bringing some other perspectives. Why don't you tell our listeners who you are and how you got involved in politics and why you're running for city council?
Sure. So my name is Scott Singerat-Sumboon, and I grew up on the east side of Columbus. Graduated from Independence High School years ago, joined the Army as a tank mechanic, spent some time in active duty, including an appointment to Iraq, and joined the Army Reserve as a paralegal, where I've served to this day. I've helped hundreds of service members fight for disability benefits from the VA. I've served as a suicide prevention leader, a drug prevention leader, a youth mentor, an equal opportunity leader. And I think all those positions give me some perspective to bring to Columbus City Council. I'm running for Columbus City Council because I want to see improvement in our community. I think that for far too long, City Council has had a one view of our city. We haven't had any diversity in 20 years. And so I'd like to bring an outsider's perspective to help close what I like to think are blind spots in the legislation that they pass. I think that oftentimes there's too much agreement and too little critical thinking down at City Hall.
Okay, so part of that is often described as the Columbus way. There's a slate of four Democrats, mainstream Democrats. People like myself would call them the machine Democrats.
Hmm.
And three of them, were recently appointed.
Right.
Do you see a problem with this so-called Columbus way, where people sort of emerge without much of a background in the community and suddenly they get appointed and they're running as incumbents? Is that a problem?
Yeah, I think that that's a problem. I think it's bad for democracy. So the idea that you can be appointed to city council and then all of a sudden be placed on the sample ballot, be provided with tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars in campaign support, and kind of run as an incumbent even though you were appointed. And two of those folks were appointed just earlier this year. One of them was appointed in 2018. And receive all those advantages, I think really says something about the way Columbus handled politics. And I would like to see something different happen in the city for sure.
What's your position on districts, people running for districts?
So I would absolutely support a ward system. I think that it would allow the different parts of the city to be represented downtown. Right now, we have a system where the majority group can control all seven seats on city council. And again, I think that's bad for democracy. And what we're going to move to in 2023 or 2024 is a system where the majority group still controls all nine seats on city council, because we're expanding to nine seats. So even though we're moving to what city council I think would describe as a hybrid ward system, it goes from all control by one group to all control by one group. So a true ward system would allow outside voices to get on city council, and that's something that I would like to see, and it's something that we would really have to put a lot of effort and resources into if we're going to make that happen at some point in the future.
Now, the so-called new system, they would still be running at large, just from, in some cases, districts or wards?
Right. So the way the new system works is that you would have to live in a given district, and no one has seen what the nine districts are going to look like just yet. But you would have to live within a district, but then the entire city would vote on you. I like to compare it to if the House of Representatives, Congress, was left up to the popular vote of the United States, where, you know, if there's more overall Democrats that vote in an election, then the entire Congress would be, you know, consist of Democrats, and Republicans would the same thing. And I think that's an absolute bad way to handle a representational democracy.
Critics of the current council have argued that far too many resources go to multimillionaire and even a billionaire developer that doesn't really live in the city, and that much of this new development often comes with a 15-year, 100% tax abatement.
It's a great deal for folks who get it. It's a great deal for folks who get it. So I support tax incentives that work and that make sense for our city. And when you look at everything involved, right, the city gives out something but receives a lot more in return. We have not received that with our tax abatement policies. You see so much mismanagement in the way these things are handled. There have been instances where, you know, businesses have received, I want to say a business has received a $3 million tax abatement for creating fewer than 10 low-wage jobs. That's a losing deal for the city. And when the city puts out information about what it does and what it brings back with tax abatements, it gives you no information to do any proper analysis. So the city will say, well, we brought in 1,000 jobs, but there's no way to know whether that cost us $10 or $100 million. They make it very hard to figure this stuff out. So the city needs to be transparent when it comes to tax abatements, especially the biggest ones. And it needs to really restrict them, because most development in the city would occur without a tax abatement. And studies show that. And what tax abatements do as well is they reduce school funding by tens of millions of dollars. Just two tax abatements, the Easton tax abatement and the Cover My Meds tax abatement, reduce school funding by something like a combined $90 million. So it's a losing deal for our schools, and our schools have had trouble for decades, right? If you look at our school report cards, you'll see D's and F's in every statistical category going back as far as the data allows. And, you know, funding is not the only issue in our schools, but it's one of the issues in our schools, because here in Columbus, we have the largest school district in the state, and we have a very high rate, higher than other districts, rate of students with economic disadvantages, disabilities, and students who don't speak English as a primary language. And all those classes of students cost more to educate. So we're really hurting our students and really hurting their ability to compete when they enter the workforce.
Now, there used to be an agreement with the city where the city would give away its own taxes, but it would make the schools whole and allow that portion to go forward. That seems to have disappeared. So in essence, aren't we subsidizing very wealthy developers at the expense of a failing school district with many, many children in poverty?
Yeah, and I would say that. And there are, you know, there are some deals where the city gives up a certain amount of income taxes and provides that to the schools to hold the schools harmless in these tax abatement deals. But we've moved away from that for the most part. So yeah, the way it turns out is we are subsidizing the biggest fish in the pond at the expense of our schools. And I would doubt that the businesses that receive tax abatements go days without air conditioning or have improper lighting or improper walkways. And we have all those problems in our schools. And I would like to change the priorities down at City Hall, you know, to find ways to improve the outcomes of our education system.
So one of the controversial issues is the new development in Sports Arena, which was supposed to originally cost the city nothing. Now, you know, people are talking about perhaps tens of millions of dollars that the city would put out for that project. What's your position on that?
So I've looked into this quite a bit. I went through the whole history of Nationwide Arena, which turned out to be something that we as a city voted against, but City Hall supported it, brought it to us.
Claiming it was not tax money, but really it looked like casino tax money, didn't it?
Right. So we ended up bailing it out. And we now own Nationwide Arena and we rent it for free. So it turned into a huge deal, but it was never sold that way at the time. And all the risks that the city took on were minimized by City Hall. And I worry about the same thing happening with the new Crew Stadium. I want it to work out. I don't know anyone who doesn't want it to work out. But the history with Nationwide Arena makes it seem like we're taking an awful lot of risk here without receiving a lot of information, without knowing exactly what we're getting ourselves into. So there are a lot of numbers being thrown around for how much it's going to cost the city. The standard number, the original number, was something like $50 million, and then now you're seeing numbers higher, more along the lines of $90 to $110, maybe $115 million. There's a lot of stuff in play there because you're dealing with present values, future values, all different kinds of things, land values. So no one knows exactly where it is. But where I have a real problem is where the city does not put any information together to allow you to wrap your head around the deal that we as, you know, Joe Public might have to swallow in the long run if this thing turns out bad. They don't put out that kind of information, and it's the exact same thing that they do with tax abatements. They'll put out snippets. They'll make it look like it's the greatest deal on earth, but you will not be able to know all the risk you're taking when you sign up for something. And it's something that could be a long-term problem for us, right? Because stadiums exist for 10, 20, 30, 40 years. So we could be dealing with this headache for a very long time.
Well, we're still paying off the city center mall that's on the books. We built it, or the taxpayers did, and then it was destroyed in part because of Easton, which many would argue was predictable.
Right.
And should there be a transparent cost-benefit analysis? It sounds like that's what you're advocating.
Well, yeah, and I think that's a start. So when the city goes into any major deals, it needs to put all of this information together and provide it to the public so that we can see the entire cost and the risk that we are taking on. And they don't do that. There's no way to find that. It's hard to find information on individual tax abatements. It's hard to find a real precise detailed analysis of what's happening with the Crew Stadium deal. Snippets get put out here and there. You get different pieces from different pieces of the media. And how does any one individual put this together? I don't know if it's intentional or not, but what we're provided as the public is well below what we ought to be provided given the risk that we are taking with these deals.
Is there a problem when essentially the mayor, the one-term mayor, runs unopposed? Would you favor clearly oppositional forces raising alternative issues and perspectives?
Well, I would absolutely like to see some opposition in the mayor's race. I wish that we had someone running so that, you know, someone could bring up additional issues and show that there is another side of Columbus that disagrees. There's something to say in politics when you can get folks to agree, but the level of agreement that we have in the city is really just like a front to sell the public on the ideas that they come up with, and everything else that they disagree on is kept behind, you know, closed doors. I've heard that this has happened a lot with the school board, where they, you know, in the past put on a united front, and a lot of the major issues that were happening in the background were kind of covered up. And they try to deal with it amongst themselves and always turns out bad. I would like to see more accountability and transparency with our local government.
Another controversial issue has been the so-called art tax. Was that done in a way that you would endorse? Some suggest that sort of gatekeepers were created and it was sold from the top down, that it didn't percolate up from the community.
Right. No, it didn't. So the biggest problem I have is that it seemed to me that if you were against the ticket tax, you were labeled as being anti-art, anti-community. And I want all of those things. I want a great, thriving community. I want great art, you know, throughout the city to make citizens proud to live in Columbus. But going back to the stadiums even, part of the ticket tax was to fix Nationwide Arena. Right, they want to install a new roof because the casino tax revenue isn't enough to pay for that. And so I got the sense, you know, just the way it was reported chronologically, that the ticket tax was really intended to be the additional bailout for Nationwide Arena, and then they tacked on the arts to it to make it more palatable, and that way they could silence critics because they don't, you know, critics don't want to be described as being anti-art and anti-community.
Well, you're listening to The Other Side of the News. This is Bob Fitrakis. I've got Scott Singrat Sumboon in the studio, and you're listening to 94.1 WGRN and WCRS 92.7 and 98.3. He's an independent candidate for Columbus City Council. Okay, what possessed you to run for Columbus City Council against essentially a very strong, well-established machine?
I want to see change in my community. Growing up, working class, working poor, if I didn't have mentors or the right person at the right time or the right thing at the right time, I might have ended up in a very different lifestyle. I live in Old Town East, and there are so many kids in my neighborhood, and I worry if they don't find something that, you know, piques their interest, that provides them opportunities, they might wind up like, you know, the drug peddlers, the homeless folks, and the prostitutes that I see on my street and who have been on the street for decades. I don't want that for them. I need to find ways to prevent that from happening. That's why my number one priority is education, and going through that from city council, you're really talking about the tax abatements that we just talked about.
Now, some have charged that the city has allowed certain areas, South Side, parts of the West Side, parts of the East Side, to essentially be underdeveloped to become more decrepit than other sides of the city that are favored. What do you think of that?
So the conspiracy theorist in me, and I may be getting a little too far out here, would say that those areas might be great for redevelopment and revitalization at some point in the future to the biggest developers in the city. But not going out that far, I would say that I think that it's a shame that City Hall's eye has been focused on the downtown area, especially when you look at what's happening in the downtown area with so much gentrification. Right, I'm in Old Town East. I've got so many neighbors who are being pushed out to the further reaches of the city. And so they're being pushed out into those further reaches that are less developed, have less city attention, have less city love. And a lot of those folks are low income and, you know, public transportation. The further you get out from the downtown nucleus, the harder it is to get around the city. So there are going to be so many challenges for the folks who used to live downtown who are being moved out. And I also think that City Hall really likes to, as one observer put it, pimp out poverty in those areas to excuse some of the bad deals that they come up with. So in the Easton tax abatement, the Easton developer agreed to give the Linden area a $5 million gift, except it wasn't a gift because the city is going to pay back that $5 million gift over time. So it was really a upfront loan of our own money. So the city was able to kind of sell the Easton tax abatement, which was a $70 million tax abatement, by saying that we also brought in $5 million of our own money for Linden. And I have a problem with that. I think that is the worst part of politics, where you see bad ideas, you know, somehow being sold by adding something small that you might even consider to be a table scrap just to make it more palatable. So when, you know, city council goes out and tries to sell this thing, that's how they get away with it.
The parking problem in the short north
is not going away.
Have you thought about that?
No, I haven't. I know parking is a major issue. I know a lot of folks have said that, have mentioned even stopping development in the short north unless the next 10 items on the list are parking garages. It's something I would actually absolutely like to work at and work on and see what we can come up with as far as remedies goes, but I don't have information to make any kind of decisions or policy judgments on what we should do, but it's something that I'm very aware of.
Is there a developing housing crisis in Columbus?
There's a housing crisis right now. It's not developing. So the Columbus metro area is something like 54 or 55,000 housing units short. And part of it goes to tax abatements. When you see neighborhoods where houses are, the property values have just skyrocketed, you can start to see the value of a tax abatement just be added to the sales price of the property. And that's when you start to know that a tax abatement is no longer an incentive to help revitalize a, you know, malnourished area, but instead it's just being tacked on to the cost. Because when most home buyers buy their homes, they're looking at the monthly mortgage payment, and so it makes no difference to them if their $2,000 mortgage payment is going all to their mortgage company or partly to the city and the county and property taxes. So it's just a switch, and it allows developers to walk away with what would otherwise have been tax income for the city and the county.
Now, the police department has been controversial, depending on where you live in this city. in the study commissioned by the city itself, suggests there's a bias in enforcing the law and how police treat people.
Right.
Any thoughts on that?
Well, we have communities in our city, particularly Black minority communities, who are fearful of the police, who are worried about calling the police for situations where you would think traditionally you would call the police in these instances. I think that we need police reform in this city. We have to find ways to bridge a gap between the difference with the way the police operate and the way people think about how the police operate and everything else in between. There's a lot going on there, and we are going to have to work together on both sides to find common ground. But that's not going to be easy because of the history and some of the biases that exist in the police department. I would like to see police accountability become a major issue in the city, and that's going to be hard to deal with from the city council level because a lot of that runs through our court system. So that could be tough. But, you know, oftentimes police are investigated by their own. Is that a good look? Does that always – is that above board? Should that be something that we should be doing independently? I would love to look at that because I think that would be a great way to start to provide some accountability for our police department.
Have you thought about a civilian review board, which was just recommended recently?
Yes, I would absolutely support a civilian review board. I would support a lot of different measures to reform the police, right? So thinking about police accountability, review boards, looking at, you know, ways that we can change the police contract. Our current contract runs through June of next year, and I don't know what stage it is in terms of being negotiated now, but it allows misconduct records to be erased after so long. It allows certain complaints against the police to be just dismissed summarily. So I would like to find ways to change the police contract because once that thing, you know, is signed, sealed, it's near impossible to change it. So we have an opportunity to do that now. I just don't know what the time frame is for getting the next police contract completed. But I would absolutely want to bring those changes to the contract because oftentimes what city council does is they'll say that there's nothing they can do. The police contract is finalized, even if they are the ones who approved it.
A lot of tension in areas like Old Town East over the historical nature of the district and new development. I mean, there's an overleaf. It's supposed to look new developments. They're supposed to blend in and right. Not look like suburban developments. Do you have thoughts on that?
So you have to strike the right balance. I absolutely would love as much as possible to preserve the historic character of neighborhoods around the city. The issue comes along with that is cost. And if you want to find ways to keep folks who have lived in certain neighborhoods in their own homes, in their own neighborhoods, it comes down to cost. I would not want to preserve the historic character of a neighborhood at the cost of pushing all the historic neighbors who might have lived there for decades out of their own neighborhood. So it comes down to balance. And that requires, you know, a lot of working with folks, a lot of exchange, a lot of information being moved around so that you can get an idea of what folks are looking for, what folks can do, because it's a huge issue and it comes down to finding the right balance between historic neighborhoods and, you know, low-income residents.
If you're getting a tax abatement for a development, should there be a requirement for low-income housing units, set-asides, anything to that extent?
Yes. So for certain tax abatements in the city, there is a requirement for affordable housing. However, developers are able to buy out of that so that they don't have to provide any affordable housing with their development. I would like to see more done on that front because I think that as a city, generally, we get the sense that developers really are winning in these tax abatement deals to the detriment of our cities, especially low-income folks. And so maybe some recalculation or some additional requirements on that would be necessary.
Well, we've hit a lot of the hot button issues. What are some of the issues that you've been thinking about that you would like to implement if you were on city council?
Well, it starts with education, and we've talked quite a bit about that. And then it moves into affordable housing. We do have a $50 million affordable housing budget over the next 5 years. And with that, I would like to do several things. One is property tax relief, especially for seniors in tax-abated neighborhoods. You know, you have seniors that live in neighborhoods. They are surrounded by completely new neighbors who all live in tax-abated properties. Meanwhile, their property values have gone up and still have their taxes.
Because those are usually the people who've bought the most expensive new developments and or rehabs that have tax breaks.
Right.
So it's driving up other people's tax evaluations.
Right. No, absolutely. And then seniors are able to receive a homestead tax credit, but it provides limited relief because it's income limited and relief limited. I do think that, and I'd have to double check this, certain folks, certain seniors qualify under different homestead rules depending on when they first qualified. But if you become a senior now, then yes, the homestead credit is very limited. I'd like to work on that. I'd like to fund home efficiency improvement programs because we all know that utility costs are a major factor of home cost. We could even look at down payment assistance programs and especially work on tenants' rights and eviction issues. We have to find ways to prevent landlords from, you know, below board forcing folks out of their apartments for reasons that are not justifiable.
Well, this area, Old Town East, where we're doing this broadcast from, a lot of affordable housing units were essentially destroyed. Huge controversy over some of them being historical, and the developers in the city went against their own historical office in allowing them to be destroyed. Any thoughts there?
So I don't know the entire history of that. I will say that it's a shame. And I really get the sense that when it comes to dealings with properties and a lot of these deals, the city just moves too slow and it doesn't do a good job of managing and keeping up with what's happening at the ground level. So when policy is created, it doesn't address all the issues or it creates new issues because the folks that make the decisions aren't on the ground getting enough information and seeing for themselves what's happening and who's being affected.
What are a few other issues that are key to you?
Well, we have huge issues with residential speeding. I would like to see a lot more traffic calming issues. I've received so many complaints all over the city, certain streets where, you know, drivers just fly on by. There are accidents at regular intervals. And, you know, these are residential neighborhoods where you have kids on the streets, you know, people on bikes and things, and they are just getting, you know, having run-ins with vehicles on the regular. I mean, I park my car on the street. I have a bike lane next to me, and my car has been hit twice, parked. So these are huge issues on certain roads, and I would like to see ways to resolve that.
Well, thank you for your time, Scott. Singerat Sumboon. And good luck with your race for city council.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to The Other Side of the News. This is Bob Fitrakis.
And Dan Dugan, WGRN 94.1 LPFM, The Green Renaissance.